Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Wednesday, February 26th, and we are continuing our conversations related to the first article of the Creed this week. And we've got some great stuff lined up, great guests lined up for today. In just a little bit, we'll talk with Professor Tom Custer, Director of Christ in Media Institute at Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota. And in the second segment, we'll talk with Melody MacArthur. She's a navigator with Outreach Social Services at Lutheran Senior Services. She'll help us navigate the healthcare marketplace. She's a navigator there at Lutheran Senior Services, helping people navigate how to go through the application and utilize the healthcare marketplace with the Affordable Care Act. So we'll talk with her in the second segment. Hope you can stick around for both conversations. I'm sure it will prove to be helpful, engaging, and very, very useful information. So stick around for those conversations. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org. Look for their logo in the sponsor section. It's the CUW logo. And look for that. Click on it. It'll take you to their page. Find out all about Concordia University, Wisconsin, and the programs they have to offer, where they're located, not just in Wisconsin. Go check it out, kfuo.org. If you have a question for our guest during this first segment, you're welcome to give us a call, 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us, family@kfuo.org. We'd be glad to take your questions today as well. Well, joining us by phone today, Professor Tom Custer. He's Director of Christ in Media Institute at Bethany Lutheran College, Mankato, Minnesota. Good morning, Professor Custer.
Hi, Andy. It's a very big pleasure for me to be with you and your listeners today.
Well, thanks so much for taking some time. I know you've got a busy schedule these days with all the activities going on, and so we appreciate your time. What is the Christ in Media Institute at Bethany Lutheran College?
Well, again, there are a few things I enjoy more than talking about the Christ in Media Institute and what we do. It's an educational arm of Bethany Lutheran College, and its purpose is to help people learn, help ourselves learn, and help others learn how to use mass media to reach out with the gospel in the U.S. and around the world, trying to reach vast audiences in an international and intercultural way with the gospel message. And we feel we need to learn a lot in order to do that well and with the quality that is required to attract audiences and, of course, to be worthy of the message.
And about, 30 years ago, mass media only included just a few areas. Film, television, and radio really were the big main areas. But what does mass media include now?
Well, of course, as you know, technology has expanded so fast and is expanding so fast, and the developments are coming so rapidly that it's just very difficult to keep up with any of them. And if our task is to harness these tools that God has given us in these last days to reach out to the people around the world with the gospel message, we just need to dedicate ourselves even more, I think, to learning how this can be used.
So how did the Christ in Media Institute come about?
You may know, listeners may know, that Bethany Lutheran College for the first 80 or so years of its existence was a two-year school. We used to call it a junior college. And a few years ago, it expanded to become a four-year college. We graduated our first bachelor's degree candidates in 2001. And at that time, we were blessed with strong facilities, especially in communication and other areas as well. But we found ourselves turning out some pretty good graduates. They were moving into television journalism and sports broadcasting. They're getting jobs at ESPN with the Minnesota Twins. They were becoming reporters and anchors at television news stations around the Midwest, and we thought, well, that's wonderful. We certainly want our graduates to get good jobs, and they are, and we know that every vocation is a service to God, as Luther taught so well. But at a Christian school, you're always aware of the greatest communication challenge we've been given, and that is, of course, the Great Commission to teach all nations about our Lord Jesus. And while that awareness is always there, it's in every discipline, every major, every classroom, we wanted to give it even more depth at our school and continually remind people that whatever their major is, whatever their vocation, they can contribute to reaching out with the gospel. And that's particularly true with media production, because it's always a team effort. Media production needs writers, it needs technicians, needs theologians, musicians, artists, performers, business managers, historians, you name it, virtually every specialty can contribute in important ways to media production and thereby to gospel outreach. So an important part of our Christ in Media Institute mission is to continually remind young Christians of that fact and gather the resources for them to take part.
So what are some of the ways that you've done that in the Christ in Media Institute? What are some of the projects or activities that you've done with students?
There are smaller but I think important things. We try to find professionals in the media industry and bring them to campus. We brought in actors, we brought in producers, we brought in camera people and so on to talk to our students as often as we can about what they do and what students can learn to do if they plan to direct their careers in those directions. But we've done a couple of major things as well. One of them was a conference called the Media Outreach and World Missions Conference. We held that back in the fall of 2012. And that conference drew more than 150 people from 11 countries, 8 different schools, mission organizations. We had mission executives. We had missionaries from overseas. We had educators coming. Students, of course, and people from the professional world to talk about what we identified as the 7 challenges that face anyone who wants to do media outreach with the gospel. And we spent a couple days talking about those challenges and how we are trying to prepare ourselves to meet them. That was our first major conference. And the second major effort, I think, is this current project, what we're calling the Christian Mobile Phone Project, that's going on this year.
And that was the one that really caught my attention when I first heard about that. It intrigued me. What prompted this?
It was prompted, first of all, by the student reaction to this Media Outreach and World Mission Conference that I mentioned a moment ago. Because, as I said, students were there along with many others, and we solicited feedback, of course, like conferences do, from all the people who attend. And the student response generally was, you know, this is a really interesting conference. We sat and listened and learned a lot from these various kinds of professionals. But we want you to know that we can do more. Why don't you call on us to do something in this effort as well? We don't want to be just passive. That was the message from the students who were at that conference. And so we designed this second effort to involve students directly in media outreach. And, of course, when you think about what students, you know, if you've been in the classroom, you know that students all have their phones with them.
Absolutely.
I asked a couple years ago, you know, this is a few years ago already, you know, how many of you have a phone? Hold up your phone. And everybody, except one girl didn't, and everybody laughed at her. So I don't know, she probably has hers by now as well. So the young people are all into their phones and their mobile devices. And when you look around the world, you notice that virtually everybody is getting into phones and mobile devices. The world population surpassed 7 billion this past year.
Wow.
And we're told that there are more than 7 billion mobile subscriptions in the world. In other words, there are more mobile subscriptions now than there are people in the world. And so this technology is out there and growing and just mushrooming fast. And so we ask ourselves, how can we harness this mobile technology for the cause of gospel outreach? And so we designed this project, the Christian Mobile Phone Project, in an attempt to start to answer that question. And what we've done is we've invited some schools. We've involved 7 different schools. There are 4 high schools, 2 colleges, and 1 seminary. And we invited these schools to create teams of students We asked each team to choose an overseas world mission field. And so we have seven, actually it turned out to be eight different countries that these teams are working with. And each team has a country. We put them in touch with a mission worker in that country to do their research and their planning during this school year. We started out with a workshop in Milwaukee at Wisconsin Lutheran College last October. Professor Deb Eaker there and her team put together a really nice workshop, and we ran 2 days, an evening and a day of sessions, where we invited these student teams to come and learn about what they can do. So we spent a nice session talking about researching the culture, because we need to know the audience into which we want to reach with the gospel. And so we encourage the students to learn about the culture, the history, the languages, the art, the music, all of the things that they can learn about the country that they're working with. And on the basis then of that knowledge of the people, and we encourage them to develop, if they can, a love of these people, on that basis develop a strategy for reaching out into that culture, to those people, with the gospel message using mobile devices. So that's what these teams have been working with during this current school year. And in 2 or 3 weeks, specifically on March 21st to 23rd of this year, all of these student teams are going to gather at Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato. We're bringing their overseas mission worker consultants back to the States for this conference so that they can meet the teams they've been working with at a distance, and they'll be there, and these teams are going to report what they have come up with for suggestions regarding using mobile devices to reach out around the world in these various countries. So that's the plan. I know that the teams have been working. I have no idea. Well, I have a little idea, but it'll be a surprise, I think, in many ways what they're going to come up with. I know some of them have been working with websites in the countries where the technology is well enough advanced where people can get on the Internet. That's possibly going to be a useful strategy. But there are other countries where the technology isn't that far along, and so there we're talking about reaching out to phones, and a lot of them aren't even smartphones. I think the most phones in Africa, for instance, are phones that simply you can talk to people on. Imagine a phone that all you can do is talk to people on. But that's what they have, and that's what's out there. And so, you know, we want to know how to use that, maybe with text messaging and things like that, in order to have a ministry of mobile outreach in those areas. So it's going to be a wide variety of ideas that these students are going to come up with, I'm sure, and it's going to be a very interesting conference.
I appreciate how you've taken something so simple as a first article item, something technology that God has provided for us, and used it to extend to bring the gospel, working on ideas of how to use it to bring the gospel to people who have yet to hear the gospel, to use it as an outreach tool to bring the good news of Jesus to others in other parts of the world, whether it be, as you said, places that are highly developed and have the technology so that they can access the web from these mobile devices, to places mm-hmm. that have just, simple, basic mobile phones where they're using them just to talk on the phone, or maybe some text messaging, some rudimentary
right.
text messages.
Right. Right, and there's so much to learn. Once you get into this, you start to learn how complex it is, and all of us are just beginning to learn this. I have to give some credit to an outfit that I've become acquainted with called the Mobile Ministry Forum. You can search for them online. They're a group of various church bodies that are trying to learn how to do this around the world, and even they, they have some answers, but they have more questions. And they've been very helpful to me and to us in getting our project started as well. But, you know, we believe that this gift of technology in various forms, whether it be, satellite broadcasts or mobile phones or movie theater projections or whatever, is God's gift to us in these days before he comes to reach this world population of, what did they say, 7 billion? Hmm. You know, there's no substitute and never will be a substitute for person-to-person mm-hmm. witnessing, you know, one Christian talking to another person about Jesus. And our favorite image of world mission work is the teacher standing under a tree in some country, you know, with a group of children sitting on the ground and maybe their parents in the background telling Bible stories and things like that. And that's happening in under trees and in classrooms and in house churches and places like that around the world. And that's crucially important mission work, of course. But when you look at the world population, you know, there aren't enough trees. And there aren't enough of us teachers to stand under those trees. And so we believe that God has given us this gift of technology and mass media to reach out in ways that we couldn't, you know, just a few years before. So,
And to use it for good as well. You know, this technology that we have, when God gives us a gift, quite often we may use it for what it's intended, but sometimes we'll quite often turn that gift around and misuse it. And so to see this technology being used for the sake of bringing the gospel to those who need to hear it.
You know, and we Lutherans are no slouches with technology. I mean, I'm talking to you on KFUO, right? How
right.
far back do you guys go? You were one of the first radio stations in the country.
Yeah, 90 years.
Yeah, and I remember my mother, who is with her Savior now. She grew up in Staunton, Illinois, which is very mm-hmm. near what my grandmother used to call St. Louis down there. And she remembered going into KFUO studios to play the piano live. I guess everything was live back then, right? And mm-hmm. and I remember as a kid watching This Is the Life, the Lutheran Layman's League production on black and white TV. I guess I'm giving away my age. So, you know, we were pioneers back then, but, you know, you kind of wonder, have we fallen behind, mm-hmm. Especially in this using technology to reach vast audiences. Well, you guys are on the web now, and you're doing great things, but there's so much more to learn, and we want to inspire our young people to keep that in mind as they move into their careers, into their vocations, that, they can contribute to reaching out with the gospel. And this is, here are some ways to do it.
You mentioned that the student response from that earlier conference is what sparked this. I'm curious, what kind of feedback have you been receiving from students along the way?
With this current project?
Yes.
Well, it's kind of shielded from me. I know these teams have been working, and I get I get inklings from them as to what they're doing. I know somebody's creating some videos. I'm not sure how they're going to recommend they be used, but I'm looking forward to that. I know some are working on websites for a country where that's going to be where it's easy for people to get online. I know the team I'm working with at Bethany Lutheran College is focusing on Africa, and there we're focusing in on getting Bibles onto phones. I was inspired by a friend of mine who goes out for walks for his health. He's getting exercise every day for his health, and he says he listens to the Bible on his cell phone. He's gone through the Bible five times on these walks he takes every day. And I started going to Bible.is and getting the Bible on my cell phone. And so when I go out for walks for my health, I listen to the Bible. Well, let's help people around the world. Let's help people in Africa do that if they choose to do that. And getting out messages of encouragement by text to people. We don't want to annoy people by sending them to those who don't want them. But
sure.
When people ask for them, send me a Bible passage every day, or send me prayer requests if they come around. And so we can make use of text messaging networks to encourage people and to give believers things they can share with their neighbors on their phones and so on. So we're learning how to do this, and And there are lots of possibilities. I think we'll be surprised by even more when we get to the conference. I should mention, anybody's welcome to come to this conference. You can find more information and registration at our website. That's Christ in Media. That's all one word, christinmedia.org. And you'll find all kinds of information there about what we do.
And we'll provide a link to that today as well with the archive of the program in our archive
section.
That would
be great.
So we'll provide a link to that so that listeners can check it out. What can we expect in the future from Christ in the Media Institute?
Well, we want to get through this project, and then we'll start thinking about the next project. But I have in mind, you know, one of my favorite things personally is the creativity aspect. I think one of the things we need is good writers. How do you take a catechism lesson and turn it into a dramatization that will engage students or young people? How do you take a Bible story and get it on a Bible history story, I should say, and get it on a screen? Because a lot of people, you know, so much of the world, 70% of the world, we're told, is are oral learners. They're not text learners, and so how do we approach them with the Bible truths and the gospel story? And so we need writers, creative people who can turn these messages into formats that we can use media to reach out with. And so I'm thinking of trying to gather classes of people who want to develop their skills in media writing, and then give us the chance to produce some of those things. We do have the production is almost the easy part, because we have a lot of students who are excellent at creating the media, but basic to all of that is the writing, and so that might be the next place we go.
So spending some time working on developing writing. Very good. Well, I'm just intrigued, and I find this very interesting, having a background in communications and having that opportunity studying at a Christian university, where we took a look at that as well, the aspect of Christ and faith in our work in media. So it's nice to hear that you're doing that as well at Bethany.
Great.
Now, anything else that you'd like to share with us about what's going on with the Christ in Media Institute and Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato?
Well, one last thing that we all need to remember in all of this, you know, people talk about the power of the media, and in a sense that's there. I mean, if you can reach out to a million people or you know, vast audiences using media, there's a certain power in that. But we all have to remind ourselves where the power is when we're talking about spreading the gospel, and that's with the Holy Spirit and the power the Spirit puts into the message. And so that's for whom we are working. And that's where the success will come from, when the Spirit blesses our work, as he seems to be doing now. That's where we give thanks, and that motivates us to work even harder.
Amen to that. Well, we've been talking with Professor Tom Custer. He's director of Christ in Media Institute at Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota. Professor Custer, it's been great talking with you and hearing about the great work that you and the students and others are doing there at Bethany Lutheran College with the Christ in Media Institute.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you. God's blessings to you and your students and all that you're doing.
Good.
Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk with Melody MacArthur. She's a navigator with Outreach Social Services at Lutheran Senior Services. She'll help us navigate the first steps to the healthcare marketplace, figuring out how to start that application, what are the things that you need to do to even start the application. So we'll talk with Melody here in just a little bit on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Can you guess which well-known newspaper ran editorials on abortion and called it the evil of the age? I'll bet the super liberal New York Times wouldn't be on your list, yet that's the one. Granted, it was done in 1871 when a notorious abortionist got so rich she built a mansion on Fifth Avenue. People on the streets would shout, "Your house is built on baby skulls." What has changed about the gruesome reality of abortion? It's still killing preborn children with appalling brutality. What was once called wholesale murder by the Times is now considered a sacred right. Why now would the Times yawn at revelations of abortionist Kermit Gosnell's abortion mill, called by the FBI a house of horrors? The answer is two words: political agenda.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Are sinful desires really sins? In a lengthy email sent to us by one of our listeners, that is one of a number of excellent questions. So on the next Law and Gospel, with the help of our Ruminations pastor, Wes Reimnitz, we will address these questions and any others that you might have on your mind.
Weekday mornings beginning at 9:30 on KFUO.
Hi, I'm Pastor Ted Lesh, pastor at Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church in North St. Louis County, inviting you to listen to our KFUO radio worship broadcasts on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. Active worship, preaching, music, and singing are part of every one of our services at Chapel. Join us Sunday nights at 6. It's one more broadcast worship opportunity for you from your friends at Chapel of the Cross and KFUO Radio.
On the next adventure in Odyssey, the appearance of Witt's son brings hope.
I have to confess, Jason, I couldn't be more surprised.
But for Eugene...
The computer has found the password for the appleberry.
And Katrina...
I'm here to make a citizen's arrest.
Things are going from bad to worse.
He's gone!
Stop him!
Catch the action on the next adventure in Odyssey.
Saturday mornings at 8:30 on KFUO.
Pastor and author Rick Warren is taking on a new mental health ministry inspired by his personal tragedy, last year's suicide of his son Matthew.
I watched my son very courageously try to deal with this for many, many years.
Warren will team with the Roman Catholic Diocese of Orange, California, and the National Alliance on Mental Illness to host a day-long event next month. In Arizona, a debate is raging over religious and gay rights because of a bill on Governor Jan Brewer's desk. The bill was pushed by the Center for Arizona Policy. Kathy Herod is president.
Our organization is a faith-based organization, and we are getting many phone calls and emails of support that, you know, many people in Arizona are standing with us.
Opponents of the bill include businesses and gay rights groups. They say it will promote discrimination and hurt Arizona's economy. And police in Dayton, Ohio, say a bus driver has been saved by the word. Two small-caliber bullets fired by robbers lodged in a Bible pamphlet in his shirt pocket. I'm Norman Hall.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. The following segment is a pre-recorded interview, so the listener lines will not be open. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Thanks for listening today as we continue our conversations on these the topics related to our earthly life, our first article topics. And so today we have joining us in the studio a guest from Lutheran Senior Services. Melody MacArthur is a navigator with Outreach Social Services for Lutheran Senior Services. Melody, it's good to have you with us in studio today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, as a navigator, you're working specifically with the Affordable Care Act, and I'm sure there are millions of questions surrounding that. And so what does a navigator do?
There is actually a lot of information about there, about the Affordable Care Act. A navigator is someone who has gone through some training, about 20 hours of online training, to understand how to help people through the enrollment process, to understand, to help people understand their options for insurance through the Affordable Care Act, to be able to answer questions about it, basically just to inform people of what their options are.
So your work as a navigator is to help people through that process of enrollment, really kind of to be an advocate for them in a sense, to help them figure out, you know, what questions do you need to prepare to answer in those types of things, and where to find all the information you need to find, and
right.
Who else you can ask your questions of. I guess the first question that comes to mind when it comes to the Affordable Care Act for me is who might benefit from the Affordable Care Act, and who would be eligible to enroll, who's not eligible?
Sure. People who are not insured are definitely people who are going to benefit. Underinsured people also may benefit from looking at what their options are through the Affordable Care Act. But people who don't currently have insurance between the ages of 18 and 64 are the ones who may benefit the most from taking a look at what their options are. If you are offered coverage through your employer or through Medicaid or Medicare, if you currently have insurance coverage through the military, most of those people who are already covered probably don't need to take a look at what their options are. But if you are purchasing your own health insurance and you don't feel like it's enough coverage, or if you don't have any insurance at all, those are the people who we definitely want to let know about what's out there for them.
Now you mentioned 18 to 64. On the younger end of that, as I understand it, young people who are still eligible to be on their parents' coverage, what's the age that they can still stay on their parents' coverage? I believe it's 26 now?
I believe it's 26, yes. And families can enroll too. So it's not that children are precluded from using the Affordable Care Act, but in Missouri, the Medicaid system is set up to cover most children who would fall into those income requirements. The best option for families or parents who are wondering about coverage is to go ahead and fill out the application for all of their family members that they may want to find out about coverage for. Mm-hmm. Once they complete the application, it will actually notify them if their children or themselves are eligible for Medicaid.
Now, you mentioned the application, and we're going to get to that in a little bit, some of the first steps. What are the things that we need to think about in order to get ready for the application? Are there questions or things or materials that we need to gather in order to prepare for the application?
Sure. The application is actually really straightforward. It does not ask a lot of health questions. Actually, it doesn't ask any health questions except for whether or not you're a smoker. Otherwise, they don't ask about any kind of pre-existing conditions. The basic information that you need to fill out an application is your name, your date of birth, your social security number, and income information. And then you want to include anyone, household members on your application that you may be applying for.
And so the application is pretty straightforward information. Is it done online?
There's a variety of ways to do an application. You can contact a navigator who will walk you through the whole process.
Okay.
You can go online to the healthcare.gov website and fill out an application online. And as a navigator, actually, most of the time when I'm working with someone, that's how we fill out an application. But you can also, if you don't want to do things over the internet, you can do a paper application and mail it in. And you can also call the 1-800 number and do an application over the phone.
Wow.
So there's a variety of ways that you can fill out the application.
And just depending on your life situation, one way might be easier than the other.
Correct, yeah.
Have you gotten some response from applicants, which, you know, what was easy for them?
The benefit of doing the online application is that you kind of have really quick results, because once you finish the application, then it's going to tell you whether or not you're eligible for any kind of financial assistance. So you can get those results pretty much immediately. So the online application goes straight to the marketplace. They'll figure out your tax assistance or your financial assistance, and you can kind of know what you're eligible for right then. And then you can go on to the enrollment piece where you can actually compare the plans that you're eligible for. So there is a benefit to doing it online, but some people, you know, are more comfortable speaking to someone over the phone, and they can walk you through that whole process over the phone as well.
Now, you mentioned Marketplace, and it's probably because I'm hungry, but I'm hungry all the time. So it makes me think that it's time to eat, to go to the market and get some food. But that's not the case here. What is the Marketplace? I know this is a term that's used when discussing the Affordable Care Act and coverage. What is the Marketplace?
Sure. The Marketplace just basically is talking about the collection of plans that the government has sort of vetted, for lack of a better word, to make sure that they all contain essential health benefits. So it's a collection of private insurance plans, and the Marketplace is the way that you go about accessing those plans. They have a website, they have the 1-800 number, and you can contact them to do the application, and then you can actually enroll in the plans through the Marketplace. Once the person is enrolled in that insurance, all the rest of their information goes through that insurance company. So the Marketplace is kind of the entry point for people to get involved with the insurance plan that they choose. Mm-hmm.
So it really sounds like online probably is the most, is probably a convenient way to approach this. And also, as you said, kind of expedites the process.
Right.
Because if you're filling out a paper form, if that works for you, that's great. But it sounds like then someone else is going to have to enter in all that data from the paper form, or
right,
it's going to electronically have to be scanned or something to go into the system, since it's all a networked system. Once one begins the application, where do we go from there? You said that you would get information back about eligibility or eligibility for financial assistance.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the application, and my experience, it takes about a half an hour to 45 minutes to fill it out if you don't have any complications. But once you do that and you submit it, pretty quickly you'll get back what you're eligible for, and that's the financial assistance part of it, which is either in tax credits, or is in some cost reduced plans, and all of those are based on your income. So there's an income chart, and there's a couple of different online resources to look, and if you want to find out what you might be eligible for, you can go check out the healthcare.gov website. They have a calculator, so you can, before you even do any of the application, you can go ahead and just figure out how much assistance might I be eligible for. The assistance is all based on what your estimated earnings will be in 2014. So when you put in your income information, you're actually going to put in what you estimate that you'll make in 2014 as income, and then that's going to generate how much of a tax credit you might be eligible for. And there's two different ways that you can take those tax credits. You can either take the tax credit as towards your premiums every month. And so the website's going to just apply those towards your premiums right off the bat. You'll be able to look at the actual cost to you with those tax credits already applied. The other way is if you want to wait and take the tax credits at the end of the year, when you file your taxes next year for 2014, you could take that tax credit in kind of in a chunk. And if you don't want to take the tax credit, you have that option as well. So,
as you're describing it, with my experience as a college student in the past and working in higher education, it sounds kind of similar to the FAFSA, the free application for federal student aid. Filling out the form, you get some information back. It's done online. Did you see any similarities?
Yeah, it's definitely, the application process doesn't enroll you for anything. Uh-huh. It doesn't sign you up for anything. It only just tells you what your options are. So if anyone has any ideas about whether or not they want to pursue looking into the insurance plans, I would just suggest going ahead and doing the application. It doesn't enroll you for anything. So it just tells you what are you eligible for, and then you can make your own decisions about whether or not you want to pursue the insurance.
So you're right then. It is very similar to the FAFSA. So right. If you've got some experience with the FAFSA, it might help you with this.
Right, absolutely. It's a pretty easy application. There's really not, it walks you through step by step. The benefit of having a navigator go through it with you, for people who might not be as tech savvy, or just from knowing, you know, question by question, what's coming next, or, you know, some of the questions you may want to know exactly how to answer this question. Uh-huh. It helps to have someone who's gone through it a few times, because I've worked with people who, even though they work with computers and use computers every day, even though the application is straightforward, it helps to have someone who kind of knows the ins and outs of it. So
how are you feeling about your savviness with the application so far?
I've had really good success with making it work for people. I really enjoy walking people through the process. I really enjoy meeting people. So this job has been a good fit for me because I love meeting new people and hearing their stories. So I've found that the application process has been pretty smooth. I know there was a lot of worry about the website a few months ago. For the most part, it's been very, very straightforward since then.
So you're the application whisperer. And so the benefits of utilizing a navigator like yourself is that you have someone to help you walk through it who's gone through the application before, who's familiar with the application.
Right.
And also a new friend.
Absolutely. I try.
Well, and that's nice to have a friendly face, someone who's there, you know, rooting for you to help you go through something that for some people, this might be a very emotional thing.
Right.
To approach something like this. You know, I don't have health coverage right now. I don't have healthcare coverage. So, you know, facing that, those questions, those challenges, what am I going to do? That can be kind of a stressful time. So having someone there to be an advocate to support you and help you navigate through the application, I'm sure is helpful.
Right. The other thing I've really found is that once someone has finished the application and then they get their eligibility results, then where do you go from there?
Right.
And so being able to walk people through looking at each of the plans that are available to them, helping them figure out if their doctors are covered on those plans, that part of the process can be a little bit more complicated for people because there are about 22 plans available in Missouri. They're both divided between two major companies, but there are a variety of plans. And so just helping somebody to narrow down their options and figure out what works best for them, it sometimes helps to have, a person who may be familiar with which doctors might be covered by which plans.
So not just the first steps, but you can help with the steps after that as
yes.
well, after they get the information back and try to sort through those different options.
Right.
Which I'm sure looking at all that can be overwhelming as well.
Sometimes it even feels overwhelming to me. There are a lot of options.
Man, too many choices. It's like when I go to a restaurant and the menu, there's one restaurant we go to every once in a while and the menu is just huge. It's like 12 pages long.
Right.
And it's like, how can they have this many options? It's going to take me forever. Ironically, I get the same thing every time. But I could imagine looking at all those options can be very overwhelming. So having that support certainly is key. What are some of the challenges that, you mentioned earlier some questions about the website being difficult before, but that seems to have been resolved. What are some of the challenges that the folks you've been assisting have found?
You know, the biggest challenge that I found is that folks who make under a certain amount, their income is less than a certain amount, may not qualify for any of the tax assistance. And so people... have an idea that the less your income is, the more assistance you can expect to get, which that should be or
seems logical.
Right. That may be the case. In Missouri, so basically the way that the federal plan worked was that states could expand their Medicaid. And in Missouri, Missouri's legislature chose not to expand Medicaid, which if they would have expanded, would have covered a broader income level. Okay. So while Missouri's Medicaid coverage for children is adequate, for adults, it may be right now it doesn't cover as many people as it could. To me, that's been challenging because some people who don't have insurance but they make less than the guideline for the tax assistance, they're still eligible to purchase the insurance through the marketplace, but without that tax assistance, they just can't afford to do so. So I've spoken to a few people where they thought that they were going to be able to enroll, and instead they can enroll, but they also don't qualify for that assistance.
There are still some challenges to work out,
right.
But certainly having your support to help navigate those and figure out what their options are is valuable.
Right.
I'm sure with something like this, there have to be important dates. I know, comparing it to the FAFSA they were talking about earlier for financial aid for students, there are key dates in that system. I would imagine there are important dates in this process as well.
There are. There was a big push to get folks who wanted coverage starting on January 1st enrolled before the first of the year. Uh-huh. But the end of open enrollment is actually going to be March 31st of this year. So people who want coverage this year through the marketplace, through the Affordable Care Act plans, need to make sure that they're enrolled and have paid their first premium before March 31st. So that's an upcoming date. Open enrollment next year is not going to start until November 15th of 2014. So there is going to be a gap in the middle where you won't be able to just get online and enroll if you want to. If you have a special event, such as a birth in your family or a marriage, or you've lost your job or something like that, you do qualify for the special enrollment periods mid-year. But for the most part, people need to be enrolled by March 31st during this open enrollment period.
You've shared a lot of valuable information with us so far. And I'm thinking about this application process and the results that we find. Is every person going to go through all the same steps, or is it going to vary from individual to individual?
For the most part, everyone will go through the same steps, yes. Okay. The application asks mostly the same questions. The only time that it may vary is when it comes to the income section, just based on different types of income that people might have. So if you have a job, it might have one piece of information that you need to gather. If you have different kinds of earnings, it may have different pieces of information. But for the most part, everyone goes through the same steps, and the same plans are available to everyone. The biggest difference that's going to be person by person is just the cost of the plans.
We've talked about important dates. Are there other things that one needs to consider as they're thinking about starting this process, going through the application? Certainly having the benefit of a navigator can be useful. Other information that's important to know before we even delve into starting this application?
I think people have heard a lot about you're going to be penalized if you don't have if you don't have insurance. And for the most part, if you want to get online and fill out that application, it will tell you whether or not you will have to pay a penalty on your taxes next year. So anyone who's worried about that and wants to just go ahead and do the application, you can at least have peace of mind to know whether or not you'll be penalized. The penalty, if people have heard, I'm going to be penalized, it's $95 when you file your taxes in 2015 for 2014, or 1% of your income, whichever is higher. But a lot of folks the people that I was talking about earlier who might not qualify for tax assistance will not be penalized. If you can't afford to pay for the insurance plans, you're not going to be penalized at the end of the year for not buying one. So there's a lot of people who are concerned about that penalty, but if they can't afford to purchase one, they're not going to be penalized. So I think that's important for people to know.
Sure, that's helpful. So why would someone want to contact you? You've shared a lot of reasons. A lot of support from you, helping them navigate whether they're doing it online or the paper form, or if they're going to make a phone call and do it that way. Those are all good reasons to contact a navigator. And maybe they're not here in the Missouri. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're in another place. There are ways to find other navigators as well, correct?
Absolutely. There are navigators all over the country. In addition to navigators, there are folks called certified application counselors. The biggest difference between navigators and the CACs are just the outreach efforts. Navigators oftentimes will be going to community health fairs, doing presentations, things like that. But sure. Both of those people have been trained in how to walk someone through the process. We don't get paid commission. We don't work for the insurance companies. We're free. There's no charge for a navigator service. And we're flexible. So I think the biggest thing for me has been people can call if they are not able to get out to go somewhere to meet someone. We can go to their homes. We can meet them in our office. We can try to help them over the phone. So there's just a lot of contact availability with a navigator. And I think we've had experience with a variety of clients and a variety of situations. And so maybe someone, you know, is able to get up to a point but doesn't know what to do next.
Sure.
But maybe I've seen that before and I know, the reason you're having the problem is because you answered this way on this question. So I think just the experience of seeing people go through the application process. And, you know, every navigator that I've met has been really motivated just to help people, that we all sort of have a passion for helping people get involved, helping people get enrolled, and helping people who don't currently have health coverage get health coverage. So I think just the motivation.
And if someone would like to contact you for assistance in navigating this Affordable Care Act, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, they can call me at Lutheran Senior Services. My phone number is 314-262-8291, and leave a message, and I'd be happy to call them back and answer any questions or set up a time to meet. You can also email me. My email is mmcarthur@lssliving.org. For people who are not in the Missouri area, the easiest way to contact a navigator is either to call the 1-800 number, which is 1-800-318-2596. That's the national hotline. I've always been able to speak to a person when I've called that number. You don't really have to wait on hold. Uh-huh. You usually have access to a person and as soon as you call it, which is really helpful. Or they can always go online to the www.healthcare.gov website. At the very bottom of the first screen, there's a little box that says contact us. And if you click on that, you can type in your zip code where it says local help, and you can find a list of clinics and hospitals and agencies and nonprofits in your area that most likely have one navigator on staff.
Very good. Very good. We've been talking with Melody MacArthur. She is a navigator with Outreach Social Services at Lutheran Senior Services. Melody, thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family. We appreciate your time and all that you're doing to help folks navigate this whole application and process to sign up. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Coming up next, we've got Moments of Assurance right here on listener-supported worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.